there's an ocean of stillness that defines who we are. And there's waves on the surface of that ocean that are sometimes more calm, sometimes more agitated, but generally it's agitated. From the perspective of calmness that defines who we are at the level of that oceanic stillness, it's a service. So it's like we commit ourselves to dealing with the world represented by the turbulent waves on the surface. But who we are is that deep oceanic stillness. And it's always available. It's really worth it to try to teach this stuff because peace and stillness are greatly needed in the world. You can't calm the surface from the perspective of the surface. It's turbulent by its nature. It's from the depths of that profound peace in the depths that when we can become aware of it, the surface calms automatically because you stop messing with it. So it's a practical, I almost want to say it's a practical life skill, but it's not a skill any more than breathing is a skill at its basis. It is fundamental to who we are. It is essentially who we are. And we're just taught wrong. It's like that character Wimplo in the movie Kung Pao Enter the Fist. He's taught wrong and he gets his ass kicked and thinks he's winning. That calmness in the depths seems, from the perspective of the surface, to be unimportant, uninteresting. Because from the perspective of those depths of stillness, you're already there. So there's nowhere to get. There's nothing to achieve. There's just being itself. And it doesn't depend on anything else. So there's nothing else that needs to happen for it to be the case. It already is. And it's nourishing. It's powerful in its effect to help sustain us through life's challenges. I mean, you could look for something on the surface. In other words, something in regular day-to-day life, something that you can grasp or think about. Some strategy, some plan, some achievement, some task or something to set things right in a way, like to help you feel better about life. I mean, we do these things all the time. We make plans and so on, but when those plans are disconnected from those depths, we get really anxious because the surface is really unpredictable and it roils and changes, and you know, one wave comes from out of nowhere and another one isn't the way we wanted it to be, and it's frustrating and it's scary because we can't control it, and it's just rising and falling of fortunes, and we're lucky to make any progress at all. It's what I'm trying to teach is that in the midst of those difficulties, we can draw on a deeper source of stillness that's already there, and that basically it reassures us that we're okay. Like, I can feel my sense of self. It's like it's floating, just like you might be floating in a body of water, and there's some movement. There's always some turbulence on that surface. But it's like the swimmer who stops struggling and just breathes and floats. It's okay. There's a great, I almost want to say power, but that's easily misconstrued. It's a profound essence. It doesn't judge. So we're in a sense held by it and held up by it. And it's always available. And this transcends what we call life, death. You know, bodies are generated and live for a while and then decline and then die, return to the soil, and then more bodies arise in this cycle on the surface. From the perspective of a deeper awareness of this profound stillness, those cycles on the surface, entire cycles of history, are like less important than grains of sand being blown around on a beach. If you think how peaceful that could be, the waves coming in, and it's a source of strength and stability in uncertain times. Times are always uncertain. So it's just there. It's here. When most people want to be happy, the secret is you're never going to be happy. Because on the surface of that ocean, which is the world, the constantly changing and roiling and tumbling, nothing's ever secure. Nothing's ever entirely certain. And happiness is opposed to sadness and is part of that, those waves that rise and fall. You could look at a triumph as a great peak of a wave, or depression as being a trough hollowing out of those waves, and they rise and fall endlessly. It's pretty meaningless by itself. The ocean only makes sense if you take its totality into account. But what we tend to do is take the surface into account by itself, and it's more or less insanity, because there's not much of a conscious connection to peacefulness represented by the ocean's depths. It only makes sense when it's taken in its totality, so that would include the surface and the depths. And when you really back out and look at the whole thing, it's just an ocean. It's just one ocean. And the many modifications on that ocean's surface are, in the universal scope of things, unimportant. There's a focus on survival and achievement that's certainly laudable. In some sense, it's just, no matter how high the waves are, they become troughs. It's constantly changing. And we don't really know what to do with loss and, for lack of a better term, emptiness. There's a sense of nothingness that we don't know what to do with. So all we know are things. It's like we know what the waves are, but the troughs scare us. You know, that sense of loss or sense of nothing. Really, there's no such thing as nothing, because it's just a modification of a profound reality represented by this ocean. So if you're not aware of the depths, those troughs will seem scary, because the idea is that the peaks are what matter, the things that stand out. The hero standing on a high hill, having just conquered something or someone. Just give it time. It's going to decay, decline, die, return to the dust in an endless cycle. So, taken in isolation, that kind of thing is scary and pointless, just like Camus' Sisyphus rolling the boulder up the hill and then it rolls back down, and it's a punishment given to him by the gods. This meaningless activity, this pointless torture, and yet that's basically what life is. The surface life that we're talking about, that's disconnected from a deeper truth or beingness. Happiness and sadness are two sides of the same coin, in a similar way that you can't have a wave without a trough. And it's constantly changing. I mean, even the earth will burn out eventually, give it enough time. If there's a thing that gives you happiness, then when that thing is no longer there, it's going to cause you sadness. So like, a job promotion might make you happy for a while, but then you get fired and then you'll be sad because you lost that thing. And wisdom would suggest that we need to approach that kind of thing with detachment. So we could be happy getting a job promotion. It's just, there's an awareness. I use the word wisdom. It's something that's natural to us. It's wise to realize that fortunes change inevitably. So logically, it wouldn't make sense to cling to that thing for happiness, for a lasting, indelible, sustaining, and powerful kind of happiness. So we could be happy when we get the promotion, that's fine. But with that awareness that it can pass, or that it will pass, it can change, if we can allow and relax in a way that allows that, say, job promotion to occur with less attachment, why would we have less attachment? Merely because it's going to change. That's part of life. It doesn't make sense to cling to it as our source of something solid and unchangeable, because all you have to do is look at it carefully and you'll see that it passes. So our grip on it relaxes a little bit if we can see that. It's a profound insight. In a similar way, if we get fired, it's not the end of the world, because it'll change too. It doesn't mean that we don't feel happy when we get a promotion and bummed when we get fired. But we don't really know what's best for us, because that promotion might lead to something truly evil. We don't know. And the job termination might be the best thing that ever happened to us. Like, what if you got hired for a company and you realized a few weeks later that they were polluting the environment or torturing animals or something morally disagreeable, then you have to reevaluate whether getting hired was a good thing. Are you really going to base your happiness on that? So there's this idea that fortunes rise and fall and that things change. So what else is there? If there are rising and falling of fortunes, those are on the surface. I'm saying that this depth It's a depth of stillness that's neither high nor low, neither here nor there. It's not in time or space. It transcends all of that and is already profoundly the case. It starts to dawn if we can let go of that surface world a little bit. There's a wisdom that says it doesn't make sense to cling to the rising and falling of fortunes as if that was going to sustain us. Because it's constantly changing, we just get tossed around. High and low, here and there, all over the place. It's only in the depths of that stillness that we realize who we are in a way that's profoundly satisfying. And because it already is, there's no change in that, neither beginning nor end. It's a relief. I wouldn't call it happiness exactly, but I think joy is a better word. But yeah, it's profoundly happy, but not as opposed to sadness, because it's not a high or a low. It's more like you found that bedrock value with a capital V underneath all the worldly values that sustains you. So freedom would be the ability to detach from worldly phenomena in a way where you're not as buffeted about by those things mentally. So you get a job, great. And there's an awareness that it passes, and there's an allowing, a relaxing and an allowing. You lose your job, great. Why is it great? Because it is. When there's no judgment of that thing as good or bad, the greatness of a thing is in its beingness. That's where it partakes of that stillness. It's when we judge it that we lose that. We cling to some things as good and reject other things as bad when really there's no such thing. If you offered me a cup of fine wine and a cup of poison, I would pick the wine. And neither one is good or bad in any absolute sense. They're just, one is delightful and the other one's going to kill me. Those are discernments we make every day as to what's healthy and what's not. It's just those things change. They're constantly changing. And we can't lean on them as if they were going to sustain us, because they can't and they won't. Well, the Buddha saw four sights. He saw illness, old age, death, and then he saw a wandering sadhu, which is an ascetic, basically someone trying to overcome these things, solve those first three things. So the fourth sight is a solution to the first three, or at least someone who's trying to solve it. And it struck him. Sickness, old age, death. You know, and it struck me too. It still strikes me that one would look at that and be complacent. It's wisdom to see that that's the case, that the surface is the rising and falling. Without the depths of stillness and peace and freedom, like I said before, the surface would be insanity. It would be like Sisyphus rolling the boulder up and down the hill. It's a punishment. It's actually a torture device devised by the Greek gods to punish this man Sisyphus. For lack of a better way of putting it, the stillness makes these things tolerable. Why? Because when they're held more loosely and the stillness begins to be intuited, there's a realization that those things don't matter so much. And you're not complacent because you realize how valuable that stillness is, the awareness of it. The peace that transcends all of that nonsense on the surface, that's what is really worthwhile. That's the gold. That's what we're here for. So we have to use that surface world and the things that it comprises to find our true beingness, our true essence that's eternal and is basically happy. It's just not happiness opposed by sadness. It is what is. It is the reality that does not shift under our feet, because it is already. It means it's utterly complete. There's no beginning or end. So you can't be complacent about the rising and falling of fortunes, because it is what is called suffering. Just like Sisyphus. And at some point you're going to wish it would stop. At some point it's going to be unbearable. One of those troughs is going to get you. Death of a child, that'll get you. What do you turn to? What does one turn to? Truth itself is the only answer to something like that. Religion calls it God, or at least Judeo-Christian religions call it God, or Yahweh, or Allah. God is not a big wave, or a small one, or anything like that. The word God refers to this profound stillness that doesn't judge. There's a misconception for you that God judges us. The Old Testament Yahweh, he's pretty wrathful. And not only that, is a he. Our ancestors perceive these things only dimly. There are those who would have an insight and try to translate it into terms the world would understand, and it just becomes another huge wave or a deep trough or something along those lines. I use the word relative to describe that, because a wave must be relative, because it only exists in opposition to a trough. That's what life is on the surface, is that kind of thing. All you have to do is look at it. So if you get tired of rolling the boulder up and down the hill, you realize this freedom. And here's the thing. Are you compelled to roll the boulder up the hill? Or do you choose to do that? Can you choose that if you're not free? Are you a slave to it? A slave is compelled and has no choice. That's the idea, anyway. The purpose of the relative is to wake us up to the absolute. So the purpose of the world is to wake us up to truth itself. That redeems it. So if Sisyphus could wake up, he would realize immediately that he has a choice, because he's free. He's no longer compelled to roll this boulder. He can see that it's a pointless activity, except the value of waking up to reality is so profound that immediately we realize that sharing that insight, instilling it in others, teaching it, that makes it worthwhile. So it's not pointless then. He's at peace in this version of it, because he can share. I mean, we can relate and grow and learn and transcend these difficulties, the suffering. And people turn to religion, but it's only if it's real that it does any good. By real, I mean the word God refers to something that's profoundly evident to me. It's just poorly transmitted, usually, because it's become just another wave on the surface, usually associated with money and power and vanity and things that are really common. Or you could make an identity out of poverty and plainness and worldliness. It reminds me of the character called the High Sparrow in Game of Thrones. You know, he wears this rough spun robe and he's dirty and he doesn't even wear shoes, and yet he's really seeking power. He uses poverty as a way to gain power and glory for himself. It doesn't end well. What I'm calling truth, with a capital T, it's an absolute truth. It's the same reference as the word God. It's just not a thing. It's not a wave. It's not an object. Again, it's akin to the stillness represented by a vast ocean, the depth, peacefulness. That makes it all worthwhile. It's beautiful. It's just hidden from us when we're caught up in the waves. We get caught up. Think about being a struggling swimmer on the surface of an ocean being tossed about. It would be easy to get caught up in that. But it's something really vital that we, I wouldn't say that we remember it like it was something in the past. It's more like a recognition in the moment of something that's profoundly true, merely because we let go of the things of the world a little bit. And why would we let go of those things a little bit? Well, it's easy. Just if you step back and look at it, it doesn't make sense to cling to it because you're just going to get tossed around. It gives us a way to meet the challenges of life with poise and equanimity and resilience. So it's really practical, I think, of young people and people in careers and striving to get ahead. There's nothing wrong with that. There is wisdom in setting goals and achieving them. It's just those things in isolation are meaningless. It's like sifting through a pile of lead washers or slugs, little discs. It's a whole mound of them. You're sifting through it and then you find gold, like gold coins. Immediately there's a recognition of value, and it puts everything into context. The realization of the value of truth itself is such that it renders everything else meaningless. And yet you also realize that it's of such value that you would use those things as a way to help others find the truth. So it would be like a realization that people value these lead washers when you realize they don't have value. It's the gold that's valuable. But you could use those lead washers as a means of relating to people and to exchange. I mean, that could be part of the economy. Is you're exchanging all this basically worthless stuff. And at some point, one of them might find the gold. And let's just say when you find the gold, you know. The gold has a way of making itself known that is beyond anything that the world could offer and is immediately understood in a certain way, where you would just drop all your coins, your lead coins. And you can't come back from that, and it changes you. So if you're out there setting goals, as long as those goals are somehow connected to the realization of truth itself, it's valuable in a lasting way. See, the surface by itself, the rising and the falling, the whole Sisyphus thing of rolling the boulder up down the hill, taken by itself would drive you insane if you had no value deeper than that. Once you really see what it is, you want to tear your hair out, and you couldn't stop because you're enslaved by it. You don't have a choice. You're compelled. You either see that in isolation and drive yourself crazy, maybe turn to drugs to deal with the pain of it, to numb it. It becomes nihilism at some point, because you would say, well, there's really no value here. Whether you win or lose, who cares? There's no underpinning. There's no real morality even. It's just dog eat dog and get tumbled around, and it's miserable. That way of life would be and is. There's a lot to talk about in that. If you look at the world as just this rising and falling of fortunes, then you, if you're very calculated and cunning, you might determine then that being on the biggest wave is the way to go, the biggest hill, the biggest, had the biggest achievements, and certainly at the expense of others. I mean, we see that all the time. We would exploit those others to get our success. It's just, if you back off and look at the whole thing, you'll realize that you're going to suffer the consequences of that, that you're going to be in the trough eventually, and it'll be a harder fall because you clung so strongly to the wave mentality, to building up, that the crash is going to come that much harder. So the struggle on the surface is redeemed by awareness of the depths. You don't take the troughs and the waves as seriously. And you see them as a means to help others wake up to the depths. The thing is, you have to do it for yourself first, or you won't know what you're talking about. So you study a text, or you listen to a podcast, you intuit a transcendent value. And I think we're getting past religion, really. People are less religious than they used to be, but we need an absolute value, an underpinning to all this nonsense to make sense of it, to bring us some peace when things are difficult, to make sense out of things, to make sense out of things that on their surface are insane, are horrible to imagine. Like I said, sickness, old age, and death. Yeah, you could look at that and say, oh, well, that's just how it is. But you lose a child, or you have a terminal illness, or you lose your career suddenly and are left homeless. Good luck with that. Good luck with that if you didn't develop a deeper support system that doesn't depend on those things, doesn't depend on the rising and falling of fortunes. We all want to be happy. We want to be happy. It's understandable. It's just, can you be happy if you're not free? Can a slave be happy? Not really. Camus suggests that Sisyphus could cultivate some kind of appreciation of his boulder, you know, and look at the moss and the lichen of it and the colors, and in a sense create his own meaning. I'm saying you can get rid of the boulder entirely and be free. I think that's a better solution. And then if you're going to embrace the boulder, you do it for an entirely different reason than creating a bigger molehill for yourself. And Jesus talks about it. He warns us not to store up treasures where rust and moth consume, but to store treasure in the kingdom of heaven. At least that's the way I recall it. What is the kingdom of heaven? It's the awareness of truth prior to all that nonsense. It is already. And when we realize it, or even a degree of it, it changes how we relate to the surface world. Don't take it as seriously. Maybe we're more compassionate because we know what it's like to suffer. We're all in that same boat.